looking at the Prairie Grains Conference. In my mind, this is the conference that first kicks off the winter meeting season. And so it's great to see people again now that harvest has concluded, now that everybody has all their equipment shined up and back in the shed. They can come back out and start to visit again, and now's the time for recapping what went on in 2023 as far as research is concerned, and for learning about what might be in store for 2024. So I'm having a great time. My day started with a presentation at 7:30. At this point, it's kind of one of those marathon days. I've had three presentations and one radio interview, and now I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that we've talked before.
We have not. So this is the first time that we have crossed paths here on Valley Talk.
Well, pleasure to meet you.
Yes, it's a pleasure to meet you as well. And, you know, as you've mentioned, this is a very busy busy conference. It seems like it's a couple days, and there's all kinds of topics and speakers, and you've been speaking a couple of times as well. So let's first go over, what are some of the topics that you have been speaking on?
Sure. So yesterday morning started out with a session organized and sponsored primarily by Minnesota Wheat, and that was their on-farm research summit. So Melissa Carlson at Minnesota Wheat, my colleague at University of Minnesota, Lindsay Pease, who works at the Northwest Research and Outreach Center, several people that work at the Outreach Center, and I are all working on a multi-year project looking at incorporating cereal rye as a winter cover crop between wheat and soybeans the following year. And so, as you probably have personally experienced, if you've spent any time in the valley, particularly in springtime, you know, when the wind gets blowing, sometimes our soil can blow as well. We have very flat topography, and we don't have a whole lot of, you know, trees or large objects like huge buildings or anything like that standing in the way of that wind. And so if soil's uncovered, sometimes if the wind's pretty strong, it can pick up the soil and move it. And so that soil is really, you know, it's basically the wealth of that particular field. It contains a lot of nutrients. It contains the soil's organic matter, so a lot of the water holding capacity of the soil is in that top layer of topsoil. And so we have designed these series of experiments to determine how best we can fit a rye cover crop into a wheat soybean rotation. As you likely know, wheat is one of the earliest harvested crops, spring wheat on our landscape. Winter wheat would probably be earlier than that still. And so that gives us a bit of an opportunity to establish a cover crop. So a cover crop is something that covers the soil. So it's kind of, you know, it's in the name. So it covers the soil and it protects the soil from loss. And so we wanted to see how best we can incorporate a cover crop into our current cropping system up here. One of the things that's being studied is how this system can impact some of the soil health metrics. So we have our soil health specialist, Dr. Anna Cates, is studying that aspect of the project. And this past year, we had three on-farm trials, one in Gently, so close by, one in Fisher, also close by, and one down by fertile, also relatively close by. All of them were in Polk County. And we also had some small plot trials at the research center in Crookston. So in addition to soil health metrics, we're our nutrient management specialist at the research center, Dr. Lindsay Pease. She's studying nutrient cycling. So another ecosystem service that the cover crop can provide, particularly in a year that turned dry. So as you can imagine, with any kind of grass crop and a lot of other crops in our system, we need to fertilize the soil in order to provide enough nutrients for the plant to grow and develop as designed. And so when we have dry, hot weather, so if we have a drought or abnormally dry conditions, that nitrogen that we've applied, not all of it will have been used up by the plant because it needs to be dissolved in the soil water solution in order for the plant to actually take it up. And so we might have some nitrogen left over, and if it's left over, that can be lost either to the atmosphere or through leaching. So it can be lost to the environment. And so a cover crop like rye can take up some of our nitrogen so that it at least stays in the system. We're also looking at soybean yield. So some of the other aspects that we're studying are how termination timing of that rye cover crop in spring. So rye does survive the winter, so it'll be around in spring, and so we actually need to actively manage it come springtime. And so one of the things that we're studying is how termination timing of the rye in relation to soybean planting affects soybean yield. Because in addition to providing these ecosystem services, the last thing we'd want the rye to do is to harm our cash crop. And that's because soybeans are what pays the bills. So farmers aren't running a charity. They need to run a profitable operation. And so what we're trying to do is, over multiple years, multiple fields, multiple locations, we're trying to find that sweet spot and figure out when we need to terminate rye to reduce our risk to the soybean crop and to maximize those ecosystem services. So we're targeting termination before, at, and after soybean planting. So there's a large team of people working on this study. We think it's very important. We've received some funding from Minnesota Soybean, from Minnesota Wheat Research and Promotion Councils, and we've also received funding from USDA to study this topic up in the Northwest. And so we're done with year two. And so that was one of the topics that we covered during our on-farm summit. And like I said, Melissa Carlson has been from Minnesota Wheat has been indispensable in this project. So it's also the commodity groups and crop advisors working with us to get these trials done. And with the help of our farmer cooperators, we actually couldn't do this sort of research without them. And so while we want them to remain anonymous, not everybody wants to have their information broadcast. Without naming names, we really sincerely appreciate them and their time and assistance.
Was it easy to get people to assist with this?
It has been. After a couple of really dry years, though, it's become a little bit more difficult. So some people I think a lot of people are kind of fueled the same way that I'm fueled, by a quest for information, for knowledge. And so some of the farmers have been experimenting on their own farms. They just didn't have the, you know, statistics background. They didn't have the background to be able to set up the experiment to determine, using statistics, whether what we're seeing, what they were seeing, was due to the treatments they were applying in that experiment, or whether it's just due to a fluke of the system or random chance. And so some people are born researchers, and so some of the farmers that have worked with us fall into that category. Others just have a general interest in knowledge. Others have been thinking for some time about making a change to the system, and figured, well, I'll try it out. We've had several that have worked with us for 2 years now, down in the west central part of the state, because we focus both on northwest Minnesota and west central Minnesota. In the west central part of the state, we have had two farmers that will have been part of the project now for 3 years. So, but in more recent years, so 2021, we had a very dry year, historic drought. And so people were worried about the amount of water that would be around for their cash crop, the coming growing season. So rye was kind of a tough sell that year. And then in 2022, when soybean planting was delayed by a month because we were historically wet in springtime, some of our rye, we produced in some fields like 4,900 pounds of rye per acre, which is an obscene amount of rye. And so while yield, at least up in the Northwest, wasn't compromised by having so much rye, I think it just helped to dry out the soil. That's a scary proposition. And then come 2023, we were dry again, you know, hot and dry. We were 7 to 8 degrees above normal for all of May, 6 to 7, I believe, for all of June. And we had between 4 and 6 inches less rain than usual from May 1st through September 30th. And so when farmers are already dealing with so much uncertainty, I mean, think weather, think global markets, even war and peace, all of these things affect the commodity markets. And so when there's already so much outside of their control, the thought of adding in additional uncertainty is not something that some people have much of a stomach for. Others, I think, have a slightly higher risk for uncertainty. They have a higher tolerance for uncertainty. And so those are the folks that have been our cooperators.
Is it easy or tough to predict what will happen for 2024?
It's tough. We have had extreme years. So like I said, 2021, when we established our first rye crop in the fall, boy, we didn't see, at least in recorded history, a worse drought in the area. Like, we just had not experienced that. And the research center has more than 100 years of weather data. So that was an extreme. Then comes 2022, we're planting a month later. So we have kind of the two extremes in less than a year's time. And so trying to predict what's going to happen in 2024, I think, is kind of a fool's errand, and one I'm not willing to undertake.
Always trying to predict what will happen, especially when the unforeseen circumstances come up. Those always seem to be the worst.
Yes. You got it.
Have you learned anything at this conference?
Oh, sure. Yes. We had the soybean research reporting session this morning. So I had several presentations there, but I got to learn what the University of Minnesota soybean breeder, Dr. Aaron Lorenz, is working on. So he's working on breeding soybean varieties that are adapted to Minnesota. So not just Minnesota, but Northwest Minnesota as well. He works a lot on food grade soybeans or specialty crop soybeans, so like high oil soybeans for the sustainable aviation fuel market, et cetera. So getting to learn a little bit more about his targets for breeding, I found that quite valuable. I think the audience did as well. We heard from a couple of folks that are studying a couple of the new insect pests that have made their way to Minnesota, unfortunately. But just trying to figure out what makes them tick, how to control them, how, you know, what weather conditions they can survive, that all sort of basic information we don't currently have. So that's why that research is so important. Because if it's something that's going to affect our yields, it's something we need to know more about and figure out the weak, all of those weak points that we can target with our own management.
That's all very interesting stuff, and there's all kinds of speakers that are going on, and it's an all-day, two-day conference, correct?
That's correct, yes. Today's the big day.
And what makes today the big day?
Well, it's when all of the keynote speakers are presenting. We have the entire trade show up and running, so if people want to go in and find out what companies are working on, they can go and rub elbows with those folks. It's just, I don't know, it's a good time. You see a lot of smiling faces walking around, so I'm having a good time.
That's excellent to hear. Is there anything else that you'd like to speak about today?
No, it's just such a pleasure to meet you yes. remotely, and I always enjoy my time on Valley Talk, and thanks for your time.
Thank you for your time as well, Angie. I hope the presentations went well. Glad to hear that things are going well once again at the conference, and hope you have a happy holidays, and we'll talk to you in the new year.
Right back at you. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, as that was Angie Peltier on today's Valley Talk program.